B-Pod Studios.
This is the home of the game.
Patriots!
And these guys, Toucher and Rich, on Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Five Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. We got Hardy here in studio, Joe Murray as well, and with us right now, the great Mike Gorman, the play-by-play voice of your Boston Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. It's brought to you by Corona, official import beer of the Boston Celtics. Mike is on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, and you can watch NBC.
This is the home of the game.
Patriots!
And these guys, Toucher and Rich, on Boston's home for sports, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
.5 Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. We got Hardy here in studio, Joe Murray as well, and with us right now, the great Mike Gorman, the play-by-play voice of your Boston Celtics for NBC Sports Boston. It's brought to you by Corona, official import beer of the Boston Celtics. Mike is on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline, and you can watch NBC Sports Boston for Celtics pre- and post-game, which they've got with all these games. And I think they've got halftime as well. They check in with that with Scal's on there. And it's superstar. I'm telling you, future broadcasting superstar Kendrick Perkins, who has been excellent when Kyle Draper lets him speak. Just a guy who isn't afraid to piss people off, which I love. But that's been quite the experiment. Who would have thought that Perk would have been so good right off the bat there, Mr. Gorman?
Yeah, I had no idea. He's just a funny man. I mean, he's a guy you want to go out and have a few beers with because he just makes you laugh.
He did not look like Mr. Humor when he played for the Boston Celtics. This is kind of a revelation.
He was just adapting to the role at the time. But the role right now calls for a stand-up comic, and he's filling that pretty well.
Yeah, he's been great, because the best thing, too, is that he's actually pissing off players sometimes, too, and Kendrick doesn't care. The guy knows all these guys anyway. He does not care. But real quick, because this is something that has to be talked about, because the series as we know it, which everyone's looking forward to, this is going to be a great battle between two very good teams from two very good organizations, unlike what we saw in the last round. But there's talk right now because of, unfortunately, the shooting this past week, that some of the players are talking about potentially boycotting this game. I know that Fred Van Fleet, he might have been the most explicit in speaking about boycotting it. You saw Jaylen Brown yesterday hinting around to it, as well as Marcus Smart. What do you think the chances are that this game goes on as scheduled tomorrow night?
50-50.
Wow.
The players are there for a twofold purpose. One is to decide an NBA champion. Another is to get their agenda out to the public here. And I think I would be very much in favor of whatever the players decide. And I think the players are probably going to lean towards not playing the game.
So, Mike, sorry, Rich. I wonder if there's something else planned beyond that. Not playing the game would certainly be a statement. Would there be something more? Because what I would be afraid of for them is they're going to go to a great length like that and not play the game and then be overshadowed by other stuff that's going on. And it's not as much of a news story if nothing happens, as opposed to, okay, we're not going to play and we're going to do this in addition to that. Have you heard anything along those lines?
No, I really haven't. There's still a lot of, a lot of this is still spontaneous in terms of speaking out. I thought Doc was a good example of that last night. He certainly was very eloquent, and that you could tell was not planned. That just came out of him. I think, it's a perfect opportunity for the players to express how they feel, and for only one day to go by and play the game the next day. There's no logistics problems. There's no people moving around. There's no people leaving or coming or going. Everybody is right there. I think it's an excellent opportunity for the players to make a statement and then get back to the business of basketball after that.
I think the one thing yesterday that seemed to be the most concerning as far as just whether or not the game was going to be played. Obviously, there's more things important than the game. But was when Jaylen Brown tweeted, I feel like I want to protest. And, you know, there's also talk about these players leaving the bubble to go protest. And as you know, if that happens, that sets everything back. Because then you have to come back and you have to quarantine and it's quite the process. And, you know, I wonder if that's the route that they go, that really puts things behind the eight ball, correct?
Yeah, it certainly would. I've not heard anything that they have the intention to do that, to leave the bubble and cause a 7-day delay and everything that would happen until after they got back. I don't think that's in the players' minds to necessarily want to do that. This has run remarkably well in Orlando. The NBA has done a terrific job, I think, of setting up in the circumstances that allowed them down there. And players have responded with some excellent basketball. I mean, the basketball has been really good to watch, and that was a big fear of a lot of people going in. So I don't think the players now want to suddenly get fans angry at them because they can't see games. I think at the same time, the players feel they have to respond to what happened in Wisconsin, and I think they should.
Well, it's going to be interesting to watch, but you know, as far as the basketball is concerned, you're right. I mean, it has been really fun to watch. And I know with the Celtics right now, you know, they're coming from playing a team that, as we saw, you just couldn't hide the dysfunction from that 76ers organization just all around. I mean, they don't know how to use Al Horford. They've got, you know, issues with oil and water that are Simmons and Embiid. Can they work together? You know, there's just, for years, this whole trust the process thing really has been a failure. They just got rid of their coach. But you're going from one organization that's a mess to really one that over the last several years has shown you that they're one of the best in the league. And what the Raptors have done, and especially Nick Nurse with this team that was not supposed to be as good as they were once Kawhi Leonard left, has really been something. So, you know, this matchup is going to be one that, you know, you're not going to get those little advantages that you get when you're playing a team that's just disorganized and doesn't have good coaching. This is actually going to be a really, really tough matchup for the Celtics.
Yeah, I think you can make a pretty good argument over the second half of the season that they were the better team and the best team in the East. And I agree with you. Right through their whole organization, it's extremely well run. People tend to generally like each other, which was obviously not the case in Philadelphia. So, yeah, this turns out to be a heck of a series. I mean, as much of a home court advantage Boston always had at the Garden, the same thing held true for Toronto up in where they played in Toronto. So this is going to be interesting to see how this plays out on a neutral court. I think that favors the Celtics, actually.
Hey, Mike, I just wanted to ask you what you thought, if this would be a high-scoring series or a low-scoring series, and do you think the benches will tell the story who wins the series?
Did you have the over last night, I hope? Dallas game. How about
yes,
that? Huh?
Yes.
262 or something? Is that what
that's a lot of points, man.
It was absurd. It was absurd.
Yeah. Well, you know, you would know this better than most. Most of the games have been going over. People can't seem to set the number high enough. The rims are very friendly in this gym. These gyms they're playing in, the players seem to like the atmosphere. You're Donovan Mitchell, Murray, Leonard, you go on and on with a list of guys who are scoring big-time points. That said, I think Boston, Toronto may be a little tighter played than necessarily the Clippers and Dallas. I think it's a really good matchup of the teams with good individual play, excellent bench play, well coached. I just think it's going to be a real good basketball series to watch. I like Boston's chances because I think they're a very good neutral court team. But Toronto has the advantage. They've been there for 2 weeks longer than anybody else, so they should be well acclimated to Florida life. And again, I think it's going to be a heck of a series. I hope we don't have an interruption. If we have an interruption of a day, everybody can handle that. We can move on afterwards. I hope we don't end up with some interruption of 7 days because people have to have left the bubble and have to come back that way. That would be a problem.
Mike, what do you attribute
from an interest level?
Yeah. What do you attribute the high scoring to? I mean, is it a combination of factors? I mean, no fans around there. There's, you know, fewer distractions, literally and figuratively, you know, when the games are actually going on. But watching it, it doesn't seem like they're playing all-star basketball. I mean, there's defense being played, but the scoring, like you and Joe just said, it's out of control.
Yeah, I think part of that, just off the top of my head, but I think part of that is the fact is that they're all locked up together. Nobody's going out. Nobody's partying. Nobody's doing anything. And nobody's arriving on flights at 3 o'clock in the morning. They're there, and they're together, and they're living a fairly regimented lifestyle. And I think that brings out the best physically in the players. And as a result, we have these ridiculously high-scoring games. I mean, that go back and look at playoff scores from a year or two ago, and they were in the 90s, 99, 89, 98, 87, scores like that. Now everything seems to be 120-plus. So I think it's just the guys being in excellent shape, being well-rested, and probably not having been distracted by being on the other guy's home court.
How much does it mean if Kyle Lowry's out? Because, I mean, I don't think they've decided whether or not he's going to play. I mean, it's obviously a big deal.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal. He's the heart and soul of that team. He's very willingly given up the scoring role to let other people do it, but he's tough as nails. You don't often have your two toughest guys be your starting backcourt, and that's pretty much the case with Toronto. I think he's a huge key. If he doesn't play, that's a real blow to them. They'll respond because they're well-coached and deep. But you're talking about taking away your leader.
Totally. And I think that I've completely bought into the hype, unfortunately, because is it me or for the remaining teams in the East, do the Bucks seem like the least intimidating right now? And I know that that is the dumbest thing to say because they have one of the greatest players on the planet. But I'm buying into the hype with the Heat. I've seen them play enough to where I go, that is another well-coached team that is working together and playing their ass off. And obviously the Raptors have been that way since day one, and there's just still questions with that Bucks team. Like, am I off thinking that right now the Bucks are the least intimidating of the remaining teams?
Yeah, well, you're not off. You're not far off if you're off. I agree with you with what you said. I think Miami is, I've become a believer in Miami. I watched all four of those games against the Pacers, and the Pacers aren't a bad team, and they're a well-coached team, and they still could do nothing with Miami. I think Miami is a factor in this to upset somebody, namely Milwaukee. You can make a good argument that Toronto and Boston are right there. And I think that's a pretty good Final Four, actually, Miami, Milwaukee, Toronto, and Boston. You get no complaints if you've been a basketball fan throughout the season.
No, the basketball's been fantastic. All right, well, Mike Gorman, well, we appreciate you coming on. And you got a little bit of time to fill. Have you been thinking about, are you going to do anything here in the very short offseason that you're going to have, the shortened offseason? You got any plans?
Tea times mostly, yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
I thought of you yesterday, Mike, because you and I talked about playing golf years ago when I was on BCN, and we never got out there. Yes. But I did play with Tom Giles yesterday, and your name came up.
What was this again? I'm sorry.
I said I played with Tom Giles yesterday, and I was thinking about you.
Did you really? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you and I, we got to get out there at some point. We got to do it.
I think that's a good idea. It's always a good idea to play golf.
Exactly.
Hardy is really, really good. So just beware. And he loves to gamble. Beware the hustle. I'm giving you a heads up because you're a friend of mine, Mike Gorman. Beware the hustle. He's extremely good. And he loves to gamble.
Shot an 83 yesterday as my low round of the year. Does that sound good? It's not.
That's
really good.
Trust me, we'd have a good time.
All right. Well, Mike Gorman, we appreciate you coming on. We'll talk to you again soon, all right?
You bet, guys. Take care.
All right, thanks so much. We got Bob Soucy coming up. He was over at Patriots camp. We'll get to him, and also Mr. Billy Jaffe from Nesson will be joining us as well right at 9 o'clock to talk about the horrible ending of a game last night. But you don't have to wait too long to hopefully right the ship. That's tonight. You get the puck drop here on 98.5 of Sports Hub. We'll get to all that right after this.
This is not your conventional sports radio show.
It's become painfully clear.
Toucher and Rich, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.5 of Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich. Got Hardy and Joe Murray here in studio, and it was hitting very well. What was it 7-2? The under on the first period of on goals, and I think it was 1.5 yesterday. So I lost my bet.
Yeah, we lost. Okay, yeah, but you got to ride it, right? You got to ride the hot streak.
listen, you win some, you lose some. And I was talking to Hardy earlier in the show because, you know, Hardy lived out in Vegas. He still regularly goes to Vegas. And I don't mean to put words in his mouth, but he loves it. Like, he loves Vegas. He likes gambling, correct?
Yeah, you love it. Love it.
Yes. And there's a faction of people who are grossed out by Vegas and don't like going stuff. Me, I am not one of those people. I look forward to it. I crave it. I've said many times on this show, like, you know, I think everyone has kind of had this end of the coronavirus dream. Like, what do you imagine yourself doing when you know that everything's back to normal?
I like that. That's a good question. Now, Vegas has been something I've thought about, but I don't have that itch to go and be like wearing a mask everywhere, glass partitions everywhere, you know, a bunch of stuff spread out so there's no, it's not going to feel right. It's not going to look right. It's just not going to be the right vibe.
But
so,
when it's done, is that kind of your, because with me, I've said this to Joe, my like happy place, my like I've got this just vision in my head is I will know that it's all over when I am in a Vegas casino sitting at a full blackjack table on a Saturday night at about 1 a.m. That's when I will feel that everything's okay in the world. Like, that's my happy place. That's what I know. Like, everyone's got these visions of, I don't know, probably being able to go on like trips with their family. Things like, but for some reason, just because it's just so wrong that it's so right, that everything's okay in the world, when that's something that we can just feel nonchalantly is like the greatest in a packed casino, that's when I will feel at my happy spot.
I have no interest to go to a casino right now. I really don't. I mean, I can just play online anyways if I wanted to. But, no, you're right. Going to the casino, having that night out, after you're having fun, then you hit the casino 1 and 2 in the morning, and you don't know how much you're betting, you're just going nuts, that's the best.
And you know what? What's great, too, is that Hardy, you know, because he lived out there and he was friends with a lot of people who worked out in the industries out there, he taught me about the greatest trick when it comes to going to Vegas.
Ooh, the sandwich, right?
The $20 sandwich. Hardy is the one who let me know about this. And Hardy, this is real. I've used it, and
worked for me this year.
You want to talk about like making a trip to Vegas a truly memorable trip to Vegas? Sometimes all it takes is $20, correct?
Well, I don't know if 20 will get it done anymore. The last time I did it was at Caesars, and when I checked in, the woman kind of like sighed, and she's like, "Sir, I'm required to tell you that we're not allowed to accept a gratuity with an expectation of anything, including," you know, she had like this thing that she had memorized. And I said, "Look, Tanya," you know, looking at her name tag, I said, "you know, nothing for nothing, but I did used to live out here. I understand the culture. This money is just for you for showing up to work today. Ooh, I appreciate you being here. That's all.
Good.
I don't expect anything." And she's like, "Of course." And then she kind of like sighed. She's like, "Oh, thank you. They make us say this now," because I'm like, "Yeah, whatever." Now, it was also a 50. But because, again, I go nuts. Like, if you want me to spend $50 here in Boston, I am going to like sweat that out. I'm like,
"Yep.
I don't know, man. $50 is a lot of money for, you know, school books. I don't know, kids. Do you really need all that? Do you really need new shoes? Mm-hmm. Let's think about this. Maybe we should hit the New Balance outlet." I have no problem handing over a $50 bill, checking in. As soon as I step off that plane, my attitude about money changes. Like, I do a 180 on it. So,
tips make the world go round out there. Like, you can get almost anything you want if you're good to the people that can get it for you. And and once again, that's another lesson that I think Hardy taught me. Now, the $20 sandwich, if you don't know, the name makes it sound a little more like discreet and underground than it actually is. But I mean, it's a mindset that when you check in, you give them your license, you give them your credit card, and then you give them a $20 bill, but you're supposed to sandwich it between the two, which you don't have to do. As a matter of fact, it's better that you don't.
You don't hide it. Here you go.
You don't hide it.
Oh,
yeah,
thank
you.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. And now there's actually a website that compiles this, and you can find it if you Google it. It's called like $20 sandwich trick or something like that. And they have a hit rate percentage as to which casinos will upgrade your room. And the upgrades are substantial. Like, it's not like you, like, I remember, now, I wasn't staying at the best of hotels. I was staying at the Treasure Island because my friends.
T.I., thank you.
That it's super cool now that it's T.I.
T.I., yeah.
So, well, listen, they've got the Ed Hardy bar there, which is, you know, all the coolest people hanging out at the Ed Hardy bar. So I showed up and I was just, I rented like a, you know, the typical like room, but nothing crazy. As a matter of fact, it might have been the cheapest room they had because I wanted to try this out. So I got there and, you know, I give the $20 bill there. And at TI, like, that's a place they're probably not used to getting tipped that much. Like, that's probably not a place where, like, Caesars, they get it all the time and they understand it because it's a little more of a high class hotel. I went to TI and they upgraded me to a second to the top floor, corner all the way in the end, perfect view of the strip, this massive room that I didn't need because I was by myself with like this gigantic bathroom and a bottle of champagne when I got up to my room. I mean, listen, it was crap champagne, but it didn't matter. They brought me up there. Every time except for when I went to Bellagio, not Bellagio, except for when I went to the Venetian, they've upgraded my room and it's been like disturbing how much of an upgrade that I got each time. And that's real. I mean, it's worked for you as well, Hardy, hasn't it?
I think you just have to ask, but I know last time, Hardy, I know when you were trying to go in March before everything kind of went down, you were, you know, you always had like the same like okay, place so, every time.
Well, yeah. So this is what happens. You know, you have kids, you get busy, you're not, you know, spending money, you know, like an idiot all the time. So I called up, you know, like my normal place, and they were kind of giving me a hard time. They were like, yeah, well, we can do like a discounted room rate for, you know, one night and, you know, put you at the casino rate, but we're going to have to charge you. I'm like, come on. I mean, like, you just make a couple of phone calls, right? I called another place. They were like, nah, same thing. I went back to the place that I used to stay when I went out there all the time when I first moved, which is the Palms. Now, the Palms has been like up, down, back, forth. I don't even know if they're open now. The Palms took it really, really hard because they moved to a lot of local, like a lot of locals' business in recent years. And they may not have, they may have been the ones that didn't reopen and it was taken over by Station Casinos. But when I called the Palms up and I said, hey, I used to go out there, you know, I moved, you know, full disclosure, over to Caesars and Encore and Wynn for a while. But, you know, I'm thinking about going back. And then, you know, you hear the, sure, when do you want to come out? Then he goes, okay, I got to charge you one night, but the other three nights will comp you. I'm like, great.
Oh, that's awesome.
It takes
really?
A little bit of work. And it's not, I don't bet huge numbers. But if you're in their system and you've been there for a while, sign up for that stupid player's card.
Get it.
I don't sign up for that stuff. Get it. Sign up for it. Throw it down on the table whenever you throw your cash down to play blackjack. Slide it in the video poker machine before you even put a $20 bill in there. Get credit for your gaming. Let them know that you're there to spend money in their casino, and they will welcome you back. They will be glad to have you back. Now, again, not always. Encore and Wynn, like the Encore out here, those places are really nice. Encore was one of the, that was the first hotel in Vegas to make more money off of their other entities than the casino. The nightclubs, the shops, the restaurant, the golf course outgrossed the casino at one point, which was the first property in Vegas to ever do that. So for guys like me, they're like, you know what? We look you up here and we see that you're, you know, eating, you know, like one meal over your 3 days here. Because, you know, I'm going like off the strip to Roberto's Taco Shop. That's what I want to eat when
Listen
I'm out
to you,
there.
Local guy. I'll tell you what, though.
They're not as interested in my act. They're happy to have me, and I love it there. I absolutely love that hotel. But if you're looking for just like the deal of deals, you might have to shop it around a little bit. That's all.
And the other thing is, if you go with a group, there's almost like nothing you can't get because you can pool together your money to really pay off people. So like if you go for March Madness is the best. Every adult at some point should go out to Vegas for March Madness and just spend a weekend gambling on games. Like that first weekend, like your head will spin. Like when the games start, you've got like four games going on at once and Joe Murray. I mean, this is Joe Murray heaven. Yeah. And I know Lifshatz did it recently, but it really is worth it. And it's just not the same. Being in Vegas, it makes it all worth it. Like, just, it's you go up and you get there early. You write down, as Hardy said, you go through the little sheets that they got out there, print it out. You get your coffee, and it's real early. I mean, like, you know, because obviously it's West Coast, so these games start early as hell. But if you get there at, you know, early enough, and you have, let's say, four friends with you, and each friend gives, you know, puts in $50. Like, I did this once. I went with my brothers and my father. We went out to Vegas, and we went to the Encore, and they had a sports book there. It was the Wynn, rather. They have a sports book there. And we pulled together $50 each. It was $200. And I got to the guy who was at the sports book. All the sports books are packed at March Madness. But there are tables put aside for, like, their high rollers. And I went and tipped the guy who was seating people $200, and I said, "Hey, is there any way you can, I just, you know, kind of slept, any way you could find us a good seat?" And he sat us down before game one, and we stayed there for 6 hours straight. And you know what? Having a seat during March Madness means everything, because everyone else is standing up. I mean, you got to either get there early or pay the guy off. But the power of pulling together the money of a group of people, never underestimate it. It's enormous out in Vegas.
Yeah, same with getting into clubs too. Like, I've greased girls.
Like, it's like the way to get into clubs, you can pay them off, but the best way to get in is that if you see a group of, like, girls are waiting up, because they don't want, like, it to be a sausage party. They want there to be, like, a balance. So, like, if you're, like, with three of your friends, see if you can find a group of girls and say, "Hey, listen, we'll pay your admission if you come with us." Mm. And then you pay them off, and then as a group, they will more than likely let you in before anyone else if it's a balanced number of guys and girls, because they want that place with women. If you're a group of guys, good luck getting in. So there you go. Hardy, you got me excited now. I can't wait till this is over with, because I want to go back out to Vegas.
Dickerson just tweeted me too. He has a great point. Make sure you have a host, a casino host. Like, if you set your room or your something up with somebody and it's just an email, just keep that person. Send them a thank you note. Just get on their radar a little bit. Ask them directly. You can use the promo codes and the offers. I got the Caesars app. It's like, there's good stuff that pops up on there. But if you run into a brick wall, just, you know, shoot your host a text or an email and like, "Hey, I want to come out this week. Can you help me out?" They are better off having people, warm bodies in those hotels and casinos than having an empty room. Yep. They'd rather give away a room and have somebody there that's going to spend some money than have it sit empty and or maybe just get someone in there who's going to give them the bare minimum for it and not gamble.
Yep, tips make the world go round out there in Vegas. That is the truth, and Hardy can attest to it. All right, we got Bob Soucy, who is right now at Patriots training camp. We will talk to him right after Joe Murray's headlines.
Now, more Toucher and Rich. Toucher and Rich. Toucher and Rich. On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Five of Sports Hub. It's Toucher and Rich hitting the post, baby. And we have Hardy in studio, Joe Murray as well, and Bob Soucy. Silky smooth voice of the New England Patriots. He is on the 98.5 Sports Hub Radio Network. You're going to be hearing him call games soon. And he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Bob is brought to you by Prop Swap. Mr. Bob Soucy, good morning, sir.
Good morning. Yeah, hard to believe, less than 3 weeks now until
is
the season
that right?
opener.
Amazing. 13th, yeah. Right? Is that the first game where it's like right that weekend, like right around?
Yes, sir.
So that should be interesting. I don't know how that's all going to be done. Have they told you yet whether you're going to be in studio at the stadium? I know we've talked about that. But you guys are more than likely going to be there, correct?
Yeah, not finalized yet, but it's looking good that we'll be at Gillette.
Okay, good. Now, I saw something. If Bill Belichick is trying to feign like there is some sort of quarterback competition, someone needs to tell Julian Edelman, because he has already, much like the face suckers from the movie Alien, has already attached himself to Cam Newton, because he put out a thing on Instagram yesterday with a really bad Photoshop of Cam Newton in a Superman suit and Julian Edelman in a Batman suit, and it says, "The night is dark, Marcus just before the dawn, and I promise you, the dawn is coming. And you know what the saddest part about that is? He probably paid somebody like $10,000 to have that done. He probably overpaid some social media guy to do something that really my 9-year-old could have done probably with just in maybe like 10 minutes. But this seems to be like Cam Newton is running away from the pack. Am I correct?
I would say that that's a pretty clear indication that Cam Newton has won over the most important receiver on the team for sure and is viewed as the quarterback of the Patriots at the moment. I'm the last guy on earth who should critique that photo, but what I found most interesting is that Julian Edelman must have been, I don't know, 10, 15 yards out in front of Cam Newton at least, because if you look at the height of each,
that's a good point.
A difference there.
That's right. He's like, hey, listen, I'm just as big as Cam Newton. No, you aren't. Most humans aren't. So let's stop with this. Yeah, and you know how cocky. He picked the Batman that's like all jacked and stuff with the super jack suit. Now, he did not do the bat nipple suit, which would have been, of course, what I think we all wanted to see. But watching them play together, there's starting to develop a little bit of chemistry, is there not?
Yeah, and you really started to see it, I think, over the weekend, and it continued from Sunday into Monday. Now, Julian didn't practice yesterday. It looks like he's on a maintenance schedule, and so he wasn't out there yesterday. But when he's been out there, it's not only in the drills where we're seeing the chemistry, whether it's 7-on-7 or 11-on-11. It's when special teams is at work on one field, and they're on the other field. It's Cam Newton and the other quarterbacks throwing to Julian Edelman. But you definitely see that chemistry, that cohesiveness developing between those two. Anyway, I think we're starting to see it, too, with some other guys. N'Keal Harry's had back-to-back good practices for the Pats, much needed. And I think Newton is a guy who definitely makes an attempt, really goes out of his way to try to engage all of his teammates. We've talked about this the last couple of days in the afternoon, and I know I think we talked about it a little bit yesterday with Hardy. This is a guy that really asserts himself as a leader in a different way than Tom Brady. He's more of a cheerleader. But he definitely goes around and he makes sure that he high fives or fist bumps everybody who's a part of that offense, whether it's a running back, the last receiver on the depth chart, or the offensive lineman. Every time there's a break, it seems like Cam Newton is making an attempt to engage those teammates and show his support.
And sorry, Rich, but it also seems like he is, gotten with, the way a lot of teams run their camps, but doesn't seem to be, sulking when he throws an interception and he needs to take a lap. There's no, hemming and hawing about it. He just takes the lap. He just does the things that I think, people were wondering whether or not Cam Newton was going to be that guy. Is he going to go along? Is he going to behave like, other players do? And not all teams do it, but a lot do. And it was one of the questions that I think have been answered so far. He seems to be down with being like you said, Bob, like a teammate and not necessarily a standout, taking a leadership role, but also doing all the stuff that would be expected of anyone else if they screw up in practice.
Yeah, Hardy, he had a fumble 2 days ago, and he took his first lap as a Patriot. Now, it made David Ortiz look like he was speeding around the bases on a home run trot, I thought. But, no, he did it. He did it. And as soon as he got around the perimeter of the field, it was his turn to quarterback. And he really had to go the full length of the field to get there to take the next snap. But he responded. And, you look at his background, and as much as there's attention paid to the Superman celebrations that he's done, or at least the flamboyance of his style off the field and some of what we've seen and heard on social media. I go back to when he was in junior college in Texas, and he had to go out to Brenham, Texas, in the middle of nowhere, in the middle of cow patties, swallow his pride coming from the SEC. He went out there and he became the leader of that junior college team, won a national championship. Then he goes to Auburn, and in a single year really carries a better than mediocre Auburn football team to a national championship. Then he goes into the NFL, and as a rookie, he's rookie of the year, and he wins over his teammates in Carolina, guys like Steve Smith and eventually Greg Olsen. I think, real pros when it comes to their competitiveness and their approach in the NFL. Luke Kuechly. And I think about those little experiences for him, brief as they were, and he was able to adapt immediately and fit in right away, and he has shown that he's done that with the Patriots. And he, and going back to the junior college days, his coach Brad Francione would engage him every day on the practice field, and Newton would want to know, why are we doing this drill? Why are we doing that drill? And Francione said, if he didn't give a satisfactory answer, then Newton wasn't too pleased. He wanted to know what was going on, what was the purpose behind it. And I think with Bill Belichick, there's never going to be a misunderstanding about why they're doing what they're doing. He's got a high football IQ by many accounts, by if not all accounts, of people who've been around him in college and the NFL. So, you know, this is a guy that came in here, again, despite all of the things on the surface, down below that surface, has had a history of adapting well and adjusting wherever he's been.
I imagine you on the swings right now at the playground with the kids in the background, like speaking to us, maybe riding the slide. You know,
our front yard is the playground. We've got cartwheels going on, somersaults, and the dog in the middle of it all.
And maybe you're in the ball pit at the McDonald's play place. Who knows? But anything goes when you're on TNR. Okay. But are we going to see anything from any of these tight ends? Because, I mean, since Gronk's been gone, this has been obviously not one of the Patriots' strong suits. But have you seen anything in these practices between Izzo and Asiasi and the man they call Dalton? Anything good?
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was really impressed the last couple of days with Dalton Keene. Last week he had some tough practices, some drops here or there, and he had to think that his head was spinning about 1,000 miles an hour. Tight end is such a demanding position, and maybe the most difficult position in the Patriots offense. And in his particular case, he's really learning to be a tight end and a halfback and a fullback on the NFL level, plus fit in on special teams for the Patriots. And this week he's had a very good week. Devin Asiasi has some skills, that's for sure. And he's, I think, quickly taken to the coaching and developing as a blocker. Unfortunately, yesterday, looked like he might have hurt his foot or his ankle late in practice and sat out the last series of 11-on-11 reps. But I think, you know, these guys have a long way to go as rookies at a very demanding position. But they've made strides already in this training camp. And in the case of Ryan Izzo, he's a very solid player as a blocker. I think he's going to be that blocking tight end for this team. He has good hands getting open. Might be an issue on a consistent basis, but there are going to be times where, you know, maybe he's able to contribute with a key red zone catch or a key third down catch for this team. But I think his principal role is going to be as a blocker, and I think this team is going to lean a lot more heavily on the running game, not an original thought, but this is going to be a run-oriented Patriots team, I think, more so than they were last year. They want to get back to, I think, what they did in 2018.
Hey, Bob, I was just about to ask about that. Has the offense looked like a new offense, or does it look like the running offense for the Patriots? And just one question on defense. Who's calling the plays on defense?
Yeah, Joe, it's been a mix on the second part of that question with Steve Belichick and Gerard Mayo from what I've seen. I haven't really, to be frank, closely watched them every day. When I have taken note, it seems like both are involved with the play sheet in hands, and they have the headset. The coordinators, or in the case of the defense, the de facto defensive play callers wear. So, you know, I think it's going to be similar to last year, where Mayo and Belichick are going to be collaborators when it comes to making the calls on defense. As far as the offense is concerned, without getting too specific, I think you're going to see a lot of differences between this Patriots team and what we've been accustomed to. And again, not surprising with Cam Newton at quarterback. And I think it's really going to have an effect in the red zone. And, you know, we're going to get used to movement at the quarterback position. I'm sure all the NFL teams that they're going to play are going to be preparing for RPOs and the read option. And, you know, that's not going to be a surprise, even though, you know, the Patriots will do their best to keep it under wraps going in. But they're going to give teams a lot to prepare for. And I think there's going to be a different dimension to what they do in the running game and even in the passing game. And it could help offset, you know, some of the issues they have with guys getting open on their own. If you can freeze linebackers underneath and safeties with the read option, the run-pass option, the play fake by Newton, it's going to be a little bit different than when Tom Brady would drop back with a play fake. And, you know, you'd have a longer developing play. In the case of Newton, it might be quick right off the fake, but he's going to have some guys open underneath because of the threat of that quarterback keeping the ball and running.
All right, well, Bob Sosi, good stuff, and go have fun with your kids. Run around and, you know, bust out the hose like they did at practice the other day. That seems to be a blast with the youngins. But, Bob, great stuff. We'll talk to you again soon, all right? Thanks for coming on.
All right, guys, I appreciate it. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
All right, thanks. I've got this spider on my ceiling
that has been slowly, creepily walking from one end of the room, like towards near the top of my head, and it's almost there, and it's like a tall ceiling, and I can't do anything to knock it down. And I'm just afraid at some point this thing's just going to drop into my mouth.
Would you freak out?
It's a good thing it's not a fish. You'd have to burn the house down and leave the island forever.
No.
I'm learning that when it comes to animals, I'm really a giant puss. But now this spider, it's not like a huge spider, but it's maybe the size of a quarter. And it's just kind of slowly been coming my way. Now, in the last couple commercial breaks, I've been trying to jump up and swat it, but I mean, the ceiling's way too tall for me to hit it. So I'd have to like go and get like, you know, like a big ass broom or something downstairs, but I just haven't been able to do. But now it's just kind of sitting there and I'm watching it, and I hope this sumbitch doesn't fall, because I'll forget about it and I know it's going to. And like in the middle of a break, and I know it's going to fall on my leg, and you're going to hear like something that should be coming out of a male human being, or any human being for that matter. So just wanted to let you aware of that. If you
hear
something,
get one of your young children to take care of it for you.
They probably got more balls than I do when it comes to something like this.
Thoughts and prayers.
By the way, a 10 and 6 is what Sports Illustrated has predicted in their big preview for the season.
Gets them in the playoffs, right, with the expanded playoffs, they're
in. It seems like it. Yeah, 10-6. You know what? If this roster gets you 10-6, you can't be upset. Agreed? Like, this is like 10-6 is probably what you would expect from this team.
Yeah, they probably go 10-6.
It all hinges. It hinges on the quarterback for virtually every team, but especially for this team. I mean, he's got 1.5 receivers. He's going to have to make so many plays on his own. I just 10-6, I'd be thrilled with.
Best coach in the league and a very weak division. So 10-6 should be expected, I would think. Even with all those situations going on, I got to think that.
You think the AFC East is a very weak division?
Well, I think the Jets are definitely weak. I think that the Bills got weaker, and I think that
I think the Bills are going to be better than you're giving them credit for.
I like the Bills.
And I'm starting to believe the hype coming out of Miami. They got a rookie down there who's really come on in the last couple of days at camp. He's starting to show him some stuff.
That's right. Showing his stuff down there. All right. Well, we will get to Mr. Billy Jaffe, who is many times seen in a green screen hell with Dale Arnold and whoever else they put in there, whether it be Raycroft or whatnot. Billy Jaffe does a great job on Nesson, and he'll talk about last night's loss and what that means for tonight's game and everything else going forward right after that.